No, I can't. It's right in all the space. It's, you can get lunch. It's on both sides. See you later. Huh?
Mr. President, Steve Bull's mother will be in the building soon. She said, "I'll be in about 12 years."
What is this, situation on now?
The way it stands is that, that question was whether there was anybody else. There isn't anybody else who can do that, to my knowledge, except Alan. The question then is a matter of relative priority, doing that versus doing the other.
If
we're going to do that, there's no way around.
It's an enormous present problem. We've got to have somebody go. There's nobody I can trust in state or defense to go.
Now, I have not talked with Alan about it. That's the next step, is to talk to him, because he's the only one who even, that I can talk to, who will know what I'm talking about.
The difficulty is, see, in Pete's case, he's got to have some bright guy, and most of the bright guys are Democrats or liberals. I mean, liberals, fine.
Well, the other possibility is Marty Anderson, who wants to come back. John has him down.
Will he program?
Erwin's talked with him and wants you to talk to Marty about coming back.
You see that foreign intelligence phone?
Oh, no.
No, that's somebody else. That's the only Anderson. Oh, no, that's Kathy Admiral Anderson. No, Marty Anderson is a young genius. He wrote a book, The Federal Bulldozer, with regard to housing. He was Arthur Burns' great protege. He is a fellow who is an authentic genius. I mean, he's really smart. The one thing I have raised with Alan that I will not share, I'm not sure that they can keep up. Anderson can. The other question is whether you'd have enough confidence in Anderson. Now, he is conservative, but I don't think the problem here is, I would think he would be all out in all these fields. He's very imaginative. And,
he was on the White House staff for the first couple of years. He was on the campaign staff. He loved to go to Stanford in some posts.
No.
But we've been trying to get him to come back because we've
been let me say this. Let's get him back as soon as you can. Talk to him. I'd like you to take a hard look at him.
Marty's here, apparently, because Ehrlich got a memo in asking if you would see him.
Well,
he's kind of will be tomorrow, I guess.
Wouldn't it be well to have somebody to have me take a look at him? If you could begin, this fellow is an economist, so he has some advantage over Alan. First-rate mind, and as I say, folks, very young. Look, tell you what, let's go over to Arthur Burns about it. Me and you,
Anderson.
Arthur Burns knows it better than anybody else. Understand, Burns will be biased for him. But just say, in other words, you want to get at a wheel, you understand nobody around here is going to try to put somebody on your staff and it's not up to you because you need the best man. My own view is that Anderson, just don't be looking at the two men in terms of qualifications, and Anderson would be better than Alan. Mainly because Anderson will know.
Two bases on which he'd be much better as an inside man. Alan will be hard to keep as an inside man if that's what you want. I don't know if it is.
Yeah. Alan likes to get out the same.
Yeah. And he's got a very big ego.
Anderson
is a staff man oriented kind of guy.
He's a scholar, staff man, totally loyal, hard worker. And brilliant. Where he really broke with us, when he broke, it didn't break it. The only point he really disagreed with us on was on family assistance. He disagreed with that, just as Arthur Burns did. Arthur, if he because they didn't want to add people welfare areas. And yet, Anderson has written some of the best, absolutely best stuff we've got. I think he writes very quickly and so forth.
He ran the whole task force operation when the administration first came in.
He ran it all.
Put together all
regular task forces. You talk to Arthur. And as I say, you talk to Arthur. Call it as you see it.
Don't make a commitment on it, because let me talk to Alan. Alan may know that he's not the guy for the other project, too. He knows more about the other project.
He may not. He can't do it.
He may.
How long a project is that? I suppose you don't have 3 months.
Maybe more than that.
But he hurt me. I think Anderson should be good here. But we're trying to get in for example, a competitive position. And we're quarters to new research. In other words, we're going to set up some teams to the very best people we possibly can, to what the United States should concentrate on, a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan, and all that sort of thing. And it's the kind of thing where Anderson is the far-ranging mind, but he could understand it.
Yeah, he's intellectually, he's substantially ahead of Alan.
Yes, that's right.
And created intellectualism.
Alan, however, would be ahead of him as a personality. Alan is a stronger, more dominant personality. Although Anderson apparently did well on his staff.
Ben did extremely well running the task forces. He's,
yeah.
You know, and working with all those task forces.
Here, should we do some checking in on that? Move on, Alan. Ask him. That's fine. And you don't want him to ask Burns about Marty yet?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I think you ought to ask Burns about Anderson. Because it may be that Marty's just the best guy for that job, period, and we'll bring Alan in some other capacity. What other capacity could we bring in? Because we want him back.
Well, Alan, we were going to bring in the... He's good on intelligence. He's good on the spy business and all that. We were going to bring him in that whole area, which we badly need help on, too.
Yeah. Especially if you're the other guy you got in that intelligence thing.
It's a different kind of a different game.
Schlesinger
is more interested in electronic intelligence. See, he's basically a very intelligent, technical man, but he is not at all as interested in the who stole papers type, and should this be classified top secret, or should this not be? See, that's a very different game. You need a political-oriented man for the second, and a technician for the first. But listen, the Anderson thing hadn't occurred to me.
Well, it hadn't to me either.
I didn't know
there was any chance of getting him, but there apparently is.
He'll be very impressed with it, I can assure you. He'll be very impressed. He says, but he's running by him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What he can do, what you need, really, is somebody that will take all these projects that you have. This kid that comes in, no damage, he works on them. I think he's doing it.
Marty knows his way around here a lot better than Alan does.
He knows his way. He knows Henry and...
Alan knows Henry. But you are probably about that.
Alan, that's the other thing. Alan and Henry fight like a couple of cats. And back fence. But Alan also knows the whole domestic economic group. Very intimately. Intimately. Which would help. Knows the government.
He probably doesn't know the international picture as well.
Oh, but on the other hand, he knows it. And I'm not sure that you want a guy. I mean, it may be a stuffy album. It may not be. You may not want a guy. You may want to keep those plays for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
See, what I mean is, you really can't have a deputy, basically, and Rogers. You can find
them. Well, we'll leave it then. You'll talk to him about
that. We want you to have a good man. And basically, Bob, if it turns out that Alan is the better one of the two, we're working out the Alan too. Because this project is terribly important. Declassification. Alan would be very good at that, though. He's so oriented toward that sort of thing. He's a historian, basically. Alan is a historian. Marty Anderson is an economist. That's the difference there, right?
Mm-hmm. He's more of a creative thinker, too, than Alan. Alan is a...
He is.
Let me check with Ehrlichman on what where the status of his talk with Marty Anderson.
Yeah.
Because John has apparently been talking to him, and I don't know why.
Or about why?
I mean, I don't know in what specific terms, because I didn't think we talked to John about trying to get Anderson back, but I didn't know he had any chance of doing it. But apparently he does. I think Marty, like a lot of people, you get away from here and out.
And
back on
the
campus,
it wasn't all so good back home as you thought. I mean,
nothing happens.
It's the remarkable thing about congressmen, senators, and the rest, they say, oh, Christ, I didn't leave home. They go, they always found, you know, it's like Thomas Wolfe, you never can go home. You can't go home again. It's never the same. You never want to. In fact, the most difficult speeches are to go back and speak at home. I mean, for a national figure. Terribly difficult. Because all the people there want you to be like they are, and you're no longer like they are. And you never will be. You can't go home again. Beautiful story. You find the same thing.
Yeah.
You'll find the same thing. Believe me. You can't go home again. You move sort of light years away, and you'll do different things. You'll. All right.
Good.
Okay. I have one more for sure. Go ahead. Very useful to have you in a cabinet position. the reason that I'd like to have you there is that in this position, while you can be a very, I mean, you can be an advocate and all that sort of thing, and the rest, sort of the White House staff man is considered to be more of a, well, he's sort of an advisor and the rest. A cabinet man can go out and sell. And you have an enormous ability to sell. Now, the minus side of that is running a goddamn department. May or may not be worth the challenge, which I don't know one that is coming up at the moment.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to happen before November, in any event. And naturally, you can guess we're not thinking of things like agriculture, which would not be, or justice, but there are others where something may happen. Now, for that reason, I would like for you to, and then between now and November, if you could set your sights, I'd like for you to get everything, I'd like for you to build an adequate staff and get everything on the track in the event that a move is made that you can make. Now, we need to follow further on this. Holman and I believe that if it is the right position, that we could appoint you to the cabinet position and have you retain this one. In other words, wear the two hats. Now that's just what we're thinking about.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand. No sense having a question. I'm not looking for any more. I just didn't know whether you had some suggestions on how I could do my job better. I don't send you a lot of writings.
If there is something which you think I should read, send it. Remembering, of course, that I have more to read than I understand every get through.
Yeah.
But you just do exactly what. When you've got something to talk about, like, come on in. And we'll work it in. And as I say, everybody else is trying to get in. You do it too. Also, the second thing is that I like the way I would urge you to do this. You've got to throw with one or the other. I am convinced. I don't know anything about international. But I am convinced that, and John Connolly is convinced that politically this could be a very major issue in 1972. We've got to think politically about it. It is here where I would urge you to tilt with Connolly rather than with George Shultz. Now let me say, generally speaking, I agree with George's philosophy. I think you do too. On the other hand, George does not think politically and should. Connolly, on the other hand, is a political animal. And also he understands a little of this kind of stuff too. I want you to keep extremely close to Connolly. So we made him the chief economic spokesman of the administration. But Connolly is the man that can have the greatest throw vis-a-vis state. He can have enormous stroke when the time comes. Right. He'll just say, God damn it, we got to do it for this or that or the other reason, and that'll do it. The other thing, too, is that if you run by anything that has political overtones, run it by Connolly. I think this would be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Keep close to him.
Yeah.
Talk to his option. Go over there. Chew the fat with
him. Right.
Have some next.
Well, if you ever hear I've got a problem with John, please.
You have none.
No, the matter of fact is that
he has.
No.
He has great powers. But what I mean is this, I'm trying to pull him,
right.
I don't want him to develop over there a special little group and a different attitude on these things that you develop.
Yeah.
So therefore, in allocating your time, lean more to Connolly than you do to perhaps some people here, right? Or than you do to the CEA or the other people. They should all be paying attention. But Connolly is the guy, for example, in all these, most of these items you talked this morning, writing down the line. Right down the line. And incidentally, it's very reasonable. If you explain to him, it changes my mind. That, if he doesn't get the reason that damn thing doesn't work, his expropriation ideas are kicking somebody in the nuts publicly, he'll understand why, and you'll say, look, we'll find something else that we can do. But that's the thing.
Kicking in the nuts privately.
Yeah, well, I know what you mean.
I want you to be, he and I have spent hours.
Yeah.
He wants you to be a tough minded leader and take him on.
Public. He wants you to be that public. His view is that that is necessary for public interest.
He may be right. But maybe one case, I like your formulation rather than a policy. In other words, maybe you can pick one country.
You see, John feels that way for other reasons. Basically, he comes out of the Texas tradition. Johnson is a raised hell, you know, stomp around, make a great lot of noise, and that's the way you impress people with the fact you're doing something. And my tendency is not to do that. I try to make big plays, but make them look easy. Connie is probably right in one sense, although you can't get out of character. I can't go rushing around acting like Johnson. And yet, not only John doesn't want to do that. On the other hand, it could well be that there is a need for, and this is where you get into the jaws and advocates and everything else, there is a need for more positive, direct, bold, you know these are the cliches of the day, quote, leadership, end quote. And he wants us to do that. It's really a question of presentation. And the rest, I think we can do it. But I'd like for you to be very close to Connie, because that will also fit into our leader plans.
Incidentally, I think the way you're coming through foreign policy side, if I may say so, is much closer to your truer nature than John's being true to his nature. I'm getting an image of a long-headed view that knows where you're going, that's planned and it's emerging. John would be a little more of a, shooting quicker. And for John, it's effective. For you, I'm not so sure.
Well, it is not my nature, basically. Yeah. It isn't that I'm cautious, actually.
No.
I make at the present time plays that nobody would dream of. Nobody knows about them. John doesn't know. You don't.
Yeah.
You will at the right time. If they work, if they don't work, I'll know. But nevertheless, see, everybody does it. And that's one of the problems we have with Bill. Bill is somewhat impetuous, impatient, overly optimistic, and he's always looking for, what's tomorrow's headline? I don't see this critically. I look at tomorrow's headline too. But to me, I will never risk a long-range goal for a headline tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Never will.
Yeah.
I'm always looking, at least, like I told this productivity commission. Well, I give him my little pitch, about the five-fingered world, China, Russia, United States, Western Europe, Japan, and that we about damn well, that we have the irony that as our relations militarily and politically get better, the challenge in terms of trade, competition, economically gets infinitely greater. Not only the challenge, the danger, but the opportunity. And that we will receive the number two inevitably unless we get off our ass and do something. Now, that sort of thing, you don't hear around the Congress, and there is nobody talking this way, but it's what we've got to talk about. It is one of the few things that I can bring to this, because not that I'm any expert on the world, but I have a somewhat of a better feeling about it than some, because I've been through this so much. And this nation to think that way. America never thinks long term. We never have.
It's
not a foreign policy. It's foreign policy. They want instant peace, instant harmony, instant friendship, instant jobs, instant stop inflation and the rest. That's why we've got a very tough problem in this economy. I'm aware of that. I'm not as pessimistic, however, son. I'm not as pessimistic for reasons that are, just basically, which are, it isn't just intuition, because I read all this crap that they send in here, the economists. And the economists are clever bastards. You know what they always do? They tell you both sides so that they're, they're conquering. You ever seen one that didn't? I mean, they'll use the term similar. But I understand that. But nevertheless, I look at the numbers. And I know that you look at the GNP this month is down, the stock market's down, the This is sluggish. Unemployment hangs higher than we like. Inflation is proving to be a tough nut to crack. I'm aware of that. But also I'm aware of the other side of the coin. Between all the talk about lack of confidence and the rest of it, when I talk to your friend who's the head of Cedar Grove, his name?
Gordon Metcalf.
And Ed Carter, Broadway 7, Hale, and all the rest. And I hear them, I say, God, this retail salesman is going through the roof.
Yeah, the roof was very good. I talked to him
about it.
Yeah, right.
And he says, with retail sales, then when you put three together, I know enough to know that when you put retail sales, when you look at those low inventories that you have, that's a fact. There are low inventories. Well, that wouldn't be an asset unless if you had sluggish retail sales. Usually you have low inventories when you have too much to retail. But here you've got a booming retail sales, you've got low inventory, you've got booming housing. Now something's got to start moving. Now I may be wrong. If I'm wrong, then, and this is my view, Connolly, and I've talked about it, somebody's got to call the signal.
Sure.
Then we'll move in November.
Right.
But not now. I just don't feel we should change the game now and come out with a wage price for it, come out with a... I'll draw on the steel people, I'm going to kick them right in the tail. And that'll get out. And that's pretty good. And I know that the businessmen, 95% of them, that's all they talk about. They're obsessed with price, wage price. They hate the unions. Hate them only because the unions are just unreasonable, so they use. And they think it's impossible. Inflation's here to stay. There's a psychology. I know all those things. But I personally think it's too early to throw in the towel with regard to the American free enterprise system. I'm not talking about long range planning. I'm for this. But I mean, you realize, once we take the step, the enormous step, of a wage price freeze, which Arthur agrees, his wage price board, if it fails, you've got to go to the freeze. If it fails, you've got to go to controls. I believe that you then will kill this economy. I really believe it. Do you agree or not?
It's like the one number that disturbs me, and I'm not an economist, as you well know.
Yeah.
It's not all the things most people are talking about, but it's related to the future, which is what we've been talking about. It's this new plant and equipment.
It's low, I know.
And I think, and I may be wrong,
businessman.
This is businessmen
like
worried about foreign competition.
Yeah.
Should they put their plants in Taiwan or should they build them here? And that's why I think this technology, investment credit, you know, that side of the thing you have.
Of course, I have the investment credit.
Yeah.
The reason we can't do that now, as you know, is frankly, if I could send an investment credit bill down and get that acted on a loan, I'd do it right now. Right now, believe me. The difficulty is that Dan Mills won't bring it out. He'll bring out a Christmas tree. Now, on the other hand, I think we're very well advised, as we are, to go ahead strongly with the economy's administrative action on depreciation. That's going to have a little walk.
The other one on technology that I know would present you with some problems, but I continue to feel as well with this morning, is the space effort. Mr. President, there's hardly a person I talk to who doesn't say, we ought to be spending more on our own economy, you know, our own industrial strength, our own economic strength.
Yeah.
And I think you might find that if you could whack that thing, I'm not saying get rid of it,
but we're going to whack the, as
I indicated to you the other day, I'm preparing some numbers that are going to shock you as to how little R&D money certain industries spend. And as you and I discussed one day, $1.5 billion doesn't seem like much around here. But you just might be flabbergasted.
Well, $1.5 billion in relation to $10 billion is a hell of a lot.
And if you told me to spend 5 or 6 projects, I'm going to send some numbers in to you so you can see how little major industries spend on R&D. And it could make a hell of a difference in this country.
Well, we've got to buy our space, I know that. We've got to buy it. Nobody's for it. And incidentally, we'll keep a capability to move on it